This is the 31 Days of Halloween. And during this 31 days, we're going to be covering the show Monsters, a horror anthology that ran from the late 80s to early 90s. Today is October 5th. We're doing this for, like I said, 31 days, covering all 72 episodes of the show. And today, we are covering three episodes of the show. And these episodes are 11, 12, and 13. Are you excited, Cake Bitch?
I'm excited.
That's Cake Bitch. She's here with me as my co-host. I am Cake Wolf.
No longer as living always. In my own sitcom today.
And yeah, check us out on cakewolf.com where you can find the cocktail, the horror-themed cocktail that we made for this show, Monsters. So we're just going to go ahead and start digging right into this. We're starting off with an episode called Rouse Him Not. This aired on December 31st of 1988. And this was directed by Mark Schrostom. Are you familiar with Mark Schrostom?
No. He looks like a weirdo.
He has only directed this.
Well,
he's not directed anything else. However, he is a special effects makeup department genius who is behind many things. He did work in Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, Devil's Advocate, Evil Dead 2, and tons and tons and tons of other horror movies.
He is just Buffy.
Yeah.
Is he a makeup artist on there too?
Yep. He was a makeup artist on Buffy for sure. He's
Wow, yeah. He's definitely a talented makeup artist.
Oh yes.
Looking at this.
Yep, he's done tons.
He's busy.
He's a busy, busy dude. So that is what he has going on in his career. This was the only thing he directed. We also have two writers, Michael Perry and Manly Wade Wellman. And Michael Perry, as the writer, he has actually written...
Extra.
He's written Extra, which is a movie that I love.
Oh,
he also wrote The Uncanny, which, again, Cat Story. Check that out. Pretty fun. The other writer here, as I said, was... Manly Wade Wellman, and he wrote quite a few things himself. He's behind some of the episodes on The Twilight Zone and Night Gallery. But what's most to take note of is The Legend of Hillbilly John from 1972, which is a really fun movie about a time-traveling hillbilly. Just completely bizarre. I know that they recently started a remastering of that. For the longest time, it was really hard to get a hold of, and the VHS copies were going up towards, like, several hundred dollars. So, you'll soon be able to get a Blu-ray copy of this that is remastered, and you can enjoy all the zany antics.
Well, you don't have the VHS, do you?
I don't believe I do.
Okay.
Nope.
We should sell it before the Blu-ray comes out, right? Just kidding.
Well, usually what happens...
We can't sell it. We promised we would never sell this horror collection.
So, usually what happens in the market, it's strange. Like, you'll get that sort of thing happening, but then it just raises the price of the VHS.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. Same thing happens with video games. With the new retro SNES system coming out, the price of the video games that are involved in that system are actually raising, and some games outside of it are raising as well.
And that's people are playing like the new version, and they're like, "This just isn't the same."
I don't know. Maybe it's kind of backwards in my mind, but that's just how it works.
I'm kind of stuck on the fact that the one writer's name is Manly.
Yeah,
like a manly man. Yeah. I didn't know that was a real name.
That was one of the reasons why I not the name of the writer, but what I was talking about previously, why I ran out and grabbed a copy of Super Metroid, because that was in the collection, and that's already kind of pricey, and it's one of my favorites, so I had to get that. Rouse Him Not stars Alex Cord, Terrence Evans, Laureen Newman. And these guys, they've done some stuff, not too much in the vein of horror. Alex Cord is the one to take most note of here, though he hasn't really done anything outside of this in horror that I can see. He is quite the ham and steals the show, but not with his talent, with his hamming it up and, misogynistic portrayal of douchebag number four.
Wait, are you talking about in this
yeah.
show. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe like he had a history of doing this.
He possibly does. I've definitely seen his face before. It's very familiar to me, but
Is he in any telenovelas or soap operas?
Quite possibly. He seems like he belongs in them. So this one's basically starting off with a starving artist that's living in a country house. And it doesn't really say where they are, but I would assume it's probably Ireland. That's the kind of vibe that I got. So she's doing her art stuffs, and she is constantly drawing this creature on a painting that she's doing. And she's kind of, like, unsure where the inspiration for this creature is coming from. This is centering around her kitchen, where the story's taking place, and right by the kitchen there's two doors, one that goes outside and one that goes down to a cellar. She has a dog named Heidi that goes down into the cellar as the cellar door just kind of like creaks itself open. The dog does not come back up. She's kind of freaked out about it, goes down to the basement looking for the dog. She doesn't really find the dog. We get to see previously that the dog had gone down there, found in the basement this patch of earth that looked like it was covering something, so the dog digs it up and then just kind of goes missing. So now that this is dug up, there's this hole down in the basement. Strangely enough, a visitor comes, and it is our boy Alex Cord, who plays John Thunston. And he talks so strange. It's all this, like, machismo that oozes out of him, and it's not very charming, but you can tell that that's what they're going for. And he's constantly pausing in his words, not in a stylistic way like Shatner does, more of like an obnoxious way where you're just staring at the screen and going, okay, let's finish that sentence, please. Let's keep on with the flow. But he doesn't really give you that satisfaction. He just kind of, like, does these long pauses where he's breathing in heavily and, like, rubbing his leg or, like, stroking his sword. And, yes, he does have a sword. But, yeah, so he's basically there to tell her about this myth. After trying to help find the dog for her. And this myth is about this witch trial that happened way back when, and this dude was convicted as a witch.
The owner of the house.
Right. And so hilarity ensued, and nobody was very happy with the jokes that this witch was playing on everyone. So they basically creamed the guy out. And legend says that motherfucker is evil and will come back. So that's what he says to console this woman on her lost dog. So that's nice. She is left alone again. And
just leaves her alone.
Yeah. Whatevs. She's left alone again. And I'm going to stop there for a moment. And we're going to wrap this one up quick because I'm not a fan of it. The acting for this, I would say, is pretty shit. Really cannot stand Alex Cord's portrayal of John Thuston. The girl's probably the best here, portrayed by Lorraine Newman. Her name's Linda McGuire, and even that's not really saying much. Acting's kind of crap. Set design, it's fine. It gives you the conveyance of this, like, old country house. The basement's fine. It's just dirt.
just dirt.
Yeah, so
with a hole dug out in the middle.
The writing for it, I would say, is definitely lacking because there's really not much going on here, and the dialogue makes me want to scratch my eyes out. What would you say? Argumentative to that?
No, Alex Cord is the worst. Now, I actually was not bothered at all by her acting, but the way they wrote her character was unbelievable. She's supposed to be this artist, and she knows, like, zero things about witches. And I mean, artists work on symbolism and that sort of thing, so I find it hard to believe she'd have no idea what a pentagram is.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. The depiction of her character is pathetic, and the mansplaining that Alex Cord does is just super obnoxious. Like, she'll say, oh, a witch, like someone who casts spells, and he'll go, yeah, well, witches cast spells. That's what a witch does, and yes, that you were wrong, but witches do cast spells. It's just kind of like... He, like, it makes you wonder, like, what the hell kind of note they were going for with this.
He is that man that has too much hair gel in his hair and saddles up beside you, women, at a bar and goes real close to your ear, hey, I want to buy you a drink, and talks about himself for 30 minutes before you can refuse his drink.
It's the kind of guy that wears more pomade and shoe polish on his hair than, you know, than the clothing that's on his body.
Did you just mansplain my explanation of what he's like?
I have to in order to stay in sync with this story. So, on to spoilers. Basically, this town drunk comes by named Mr. Ritson, portrayed by Terrence Evans. Alex Cord brings him along to try and...
Wait, so he was drunk? Oh, yes, he was drunk.
To try and dig more into this mythos of this dude who died there. And, yeah, it's pretty much just rehearsing, repeating exactly what was said before. So, yeah, dude was a witch, died there, he's coming back. Yeah, he gets pulled into the basement and dies pretty quick.
He gets pulled in by the monster.
Right. And so Alex Cord is like, I'm going to do something about this.
I'm going to go save the day.
Lorraine's like, what are you going to do? We need like a machine gun. And Alex is like, no, we need a sword and a knight. And luckily you got both with me. And he
pure silver.
He pulls a sword out of a cane that he's carrying around. And he stands there talking about how it's pure silver and how beautiful it is. And she comes over and admires it. And, yeah. And
well, we both said it's a nice-looking sword.
They spend about 5 minutes talking about this sword. And then he goes down into the basement. He goes over to the pit that the creature comes out of. And he starts stabbing the pit. Creature is not in the pit. He's actually stalking Alex Cord. He's getting right behind him.
Who'd have thunk it? He's not in the pit anymore.
Right. Alex Cord keeps stabbing the pit. Monster comes at him and fucks him up. Lorraine comes down. She's got a gun. She shoots the monster a bunch of times. The monster gets freaked out and he's like, oh crap, I'm dying. And then Alex Cord does this move that you would see in like some... shitty, I don't know. It's shitty. Like it's kind
of
like
He-Man move.
No,
he spins in a full circle.
It's kind of like you take some of the moves that you would see in Highlander, but you shit them up pretty hard. And he does that kind of spin slice off the
or
head
like
move.
What a 5-year-old would envision,
yeah,
using a sword.
Basically,
he just does like one full revolution around.
Yeah, and
with the sword like fully extended and its arms straight out.
So he kills the monster, and then they go back upstairs and for 3 more minutes talk more about the sword and how it belonged to this old knight, and it's made of pure silver, and blah, blah, blah. And the whole time he's doing this, he's stroking it with a rag, and he's, like, kissing it and staring admiringly at it, and you don't get to see Lorraine anymore. It's just all focused on Alex talking about the sword as he strokes it, and, yeah.
Well, the guy who that made the sword was a silversmith before he was a saint.
Before he was a saint.
So bad.
Shh, hold on. He was a silversmith. Yeah, so nice long pause there for you so you can really get that sunk in. The monster in this actually looks really fucking good.
Yeah, the monster's awesome.
I kind of say that that is only due to Mark Shrostom.
Good call.
Yeah. But it is a cool looking monster. It really resembles it doesn't resemble a witch at all. It just resembles this bog creature with, like, demonic features. It's got horns. It's got a lot of, like, shit growing all over it. It's kind of hairy in patches, and it has...
It looks dirty.
Yeah, it's very dirty, and it has this this sludge leaking off of it from the ooze pit that it came from. It looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's Yeah. So the monster rating for this, I'm going to give, I'd probably say a 3.5. I think it's pretty badass. It's nothing like ingenious, but for what it is, it looks cool.
I'll give it a 4. I think it was one of the better monsters we've seen.
Would you change anything?
Everything about this, except for maybe the monster.
I would definitely change Alex Cord for somebody else who can...
I don't know if it was his better. Fault.
I think a lot of it was his fault. I think the story was pretty lacking to begin with. And if you're going to change anything for it, I think you've really got to...
They should have hired William Shatner.
Sure. I mean, yeah, ham it up with some Shatner.
I didn't even like him, so...
But I think you really gotta show something to make this creature have more impact. I think it could have been a cool twist if... Like, there really is no twist to this. So it could have been a cool twist if you have the person visiting her suddenly actually be the witch. And, you know, he's making her think that there's something else as a threat. But he's actually luring her to her doom.
The drunk guy.
I think that could have been cool.
Or the chauvinistic thing.
And then you have the dog come back at the end to help her out. I think something like that would have been better.
I think, yeah, the dog should have come back.
The
dog was the best thing.
Would this work as a movie? I don't think so. No. I don't think it's necessary. Is it scary? I don't think so. Is the monster cool. Is there a lesson here?
Oh, yeah, I wrote down that he was fighting his own toxic masculinity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Episode rating, I'm going to give it a 1.
Yeah, me too. It was bad.
I think this is one that you can skip.
It was bad.
Yeah.
Rousing, it was not.
No. The next one we got going here is Fool's Gold. This one aired on January 21st of 1989. So we're finally out of the 88s here, moving on to the 89s. This one was directed by Greg Canham. And Greg Canham, he's another makeup special effects artist. He did one thing besides this short as far as directing. But most of what you're going to know him from is his makeup special effects stuffs. He worked on The Lost Boys, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Woo-hoo! Hunter, as well as a slew of other things. Another very prolific man in his career here. He also did work on the Tales from the Dark Side series. So, yeah, just all around very prolific. And for our... writer here, we've got Michael Reeves, who we've mentioned before. He's the cartoon writer who did work on Gargoyles and wrote the Batman Mask of the Phantasm movie. So we've also got some actors in here, of course. We've got Jeff Conaway, Greg Saffel, Mary Cordette, TJ Castrovano. None of these guys I don't think any of these guys have anything worth to note. Debbie Lee Carrington, she's in this, and she is definitely worth to note. She does play the monster in this one, and she played usually the tiny monster in a lot of movies. She is a dwarf. She played an Ewok in Return of the Jedi, and Thumbelina in Total Recall. Yeah, she's kind of all over the place. She also played, this is one to take note of, I think, she played one of the tumblers in Seed People of 1992, which is a great cheesy horror movie.
I saw she did stunts on Titanic, and I'm trying to think of where they would use her for stunts.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she could have possibly done stunt work acting as some of the children.
No.
Because there were a lot of shots that were far away.
I guess so.
So, yeah.
The children dying in the water.
Yeah. So, this one is pretty cool. We've got basically... it starts off with this dude that's going down into a basement to do some work. He's pretty much a miner, and he's breaking down one of the walls. He finds that there is something behind the wall that he's chipping away at, and sees some gold, so he goes to reach for that, and ends up screaming and getting pulled into the hole. Some time passes, and we connect with two other miners who go down the stairs, and they find their friend, and they pull him out, and they're like, holy shit, what the fuck? He has burns all over his face. What could have done this?
And I said, I don't know, fire?
Right. They also find some gold coins in there, so they're like, oh shit. And they find that there is a passage in the hole that was left that leads to an underground cavern. And this is basically the basement of a high-rise building, as far as I could understand, that they are looking to expand upon and create a garage or something of some sorts. So we've got the planner for all of this that is acting as the director for these miners, and she comes down, she sees this, and she's like, oh fuck, I'm gonna have to call this in. They kind of talk her out of it because they are greedy bastards and want money.
Well, no, mostly it's that one guy.
Mostly it's the one guy. So basically, they say that they're going to hold on for a second while greedy guy goes into the hole looking for more stuffs. He finds a bunch of gold, finds a whole trove of it, actually. There's a treasure chest with tons of gold, diamonds, goblets. It's crazy. But there's also a troll. And this troll looks really fucking cool. The troll is like a super hairy dwarfing puma on two legs.
Puma?
It kind of has a puma face.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really cool looking. So they basically, he gets fucked up by the troll and has to escape. And they try to devise a plan of attack to knock this troll out and get the money.
Instead of alerting the authorities that they have a dead man in the basement.
They're pretty much all on board for being bastards. As far as the writing for this one, I think it's okay. It's nothing fantastic. It's a pretty straightforward tale. I think the strength that you got coming here is from the monster itself.
I'd agree with that. I think the monster was pretty amazing.
We're going to go ahead and just tell you what happens here. So basically, there's some interesting theorizing here from an older man who has a pickaxe that he has named Henrietta, I believe. And it's about 30 years old, so it's not made with the cheap stuff that they're making today. It's actually made with iron and cold iron for those out there who are cryptozoology weirdos will know that cold iron is a defense against fairies, and a troll is essentially a fairy. So that's pretty cool that they threw that in. They also mentioned that sunlight can fuck them up, and so they got a big ass light on an extension cord that they use to carry around and keep on the troll while they collect its money. And then they bring it out and they're about to escape, but the troll causes an avalanche which shuts their exit, and he's pretty much had enough of these fuckers. They fell for his trap, and now it's time for him to eat. So he comes at them, and they have a bit of a tussle here. What ends up going down is he knocks out the older miner, and the younger, greedier miner ends up taking the older miner's cold iron pickaxe and jamming it into the thing's chest cavity, which sprays him full of the troll's blood. Earlier mentioned, a troll's blood is
boiling hot.
This is mentioned from the old geezer guy who's KO'd.
The old man is like the voice of wisdom.
Right. So blood gets all over him. It's kind of like alien blood, just melts him all up. And it looks good. The special effects there.
Yeah. He was the greediest of all the bastards.
So the lady who's there as the planner, she's like, fuck this, I'm getting out. And she climbs to the ceiling, and the troll comes back, still alive, because trolls heal pretty quick. They can regenerate like mofos. And
did not know that about trolls.
Yep. Trolls are nasty beasts. And so she gets up to the skyline, pulls down one of the rocks, which lets sunlight in and hits the troll and turns it to stone. At which point, old man wakes up and they look at each other and just kind of breathe a sigh of relief. I really liked, that's how it ends. So I really liked the monster. I think it looks super badass.
I have written down that she is a furry, dirty, toothy, kind of terrifying monster. It's actually kind of pretty frightening looking.
It is. I like it a lot. I'm probably going to give that thing a 4.5 just because I think it worked for what they were going for. It looked very creepy. And they show all of it, too. They're not trying to hide it. At first, they do a little bit with the shadow play, but by the end, you get to see it in its full glory, and it's pretty disturbing looking. And the special effects all around, like I said, were good for the dude getting his face all boiled up with the troll's blood. So yeah, I think that's a really appropriate depiction of a troll in classic cryptozoology, so I appreciated that.
I'd actually give the monster a 5. I thought that one was pretty well executed.
Okay.
Relative to, you know, it's a TV show in the 80s. Like, that was a pretty legit terrifying monster. I would have been, like, up all night if I had watched this as a kid.
So would you change anything for this?
Actually, I think this episode was great the way it was.
Okay. It's straightforward. There's nothing too in-depth about it. I kind of think that they should have commented on the fact that it's titled Fool's Gold. And maybe they should have said whether, like, they're fools for going for it, because that's sort of the troll's trap to get him some eats, or if the gold is actually, like, taking the title literally, the gold is not real.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I took it.
Okay.
I took it as both literal and figurative, but
I don't think
it was so straightforward. I think that older man, I think they drew on some traditional stories there with the wise old immigrant man who has been around the block a few times and is trying to impart some wisdom on these stupid, hard-headed young folk who just want the money. Mm-hmm. That's all they see.
Right.
It's an overlying theme in a lot of immigrant literature, which I actually had to read for class.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of cool that they were going with that traditional classical pool there. I mean, it's American. It's true American there.
Okay. So would this work as a movie?
I think you probably could expand this basic concept to a movie.
I just like trolls, so I would love some more movies with trolls in them. And why not? Let's do it as a movie. I think you could put it on a bigger scale. I think you could have, more trolls and just have it so that, like, a bunch of teenagers, one of them inherits a building and he has a huge frat party or something there because he's a douchebag. And some of them find a lair downstairs through messing around with something and break down a wall and find a whole, like, cavern just like there was in this one. And there's you know, stuff down there, gold, that they want, and they're greedy, but the trolls come at them. The trolls, block off all exits to the building and just kill all the little kids.
All the little kids.
Well, you know, the teenagers, the party kids. Teenagers. And, you know, then you could have it at the end where the party teenagers get the gold. They come out and, you know, the ones that are left alive, and they're all, like, beaten to shit. And then when the gold hits the sunlight, it turns to rot, like coal or something.
Oh, yeah, that would be pretty cool. Yeah.
And then they're just like, oh, no, because maybe they, like, let their girlfriend or something die so that they could leave with the gold. you know, and then they're all like, oh, fuck, now what? Now I've got nothing but fucking coal. That'd be a good way to end it.
Well, pulling back to the immigrant thing, maybe that's why they pulled on, like, old Irishy sort of lore okay. there. But it would be kind of cool to see a ragtag team of, like, fairies, trolls, like, all those little supernatural beings.
Right.
Well, working together to fuck these kids up.
In other media, trolls in other media, you've got Unlucky Charms, which is a Full Moon production, and that's pretty wacky taffy. Yeah, I don't even know where to go with that. There's a part in it where a troll monster is basically making himself look like a dude that a hot broad wants to fuck, and the troll dude is fucking her, and then after he fucks her, he turns into a troll dude, and he's like, haha, look what you did, and then he disappears, and he just, like, yeah, it's just, like, really weird, but I like it. It's Unlucky Charms, Full Moon production, so you know what you're getting there. There's also a movie called Troll, and it has a sequel, Troll 2, which are from...
Do you like Troll?
which are from my childhood, and definitely... Wow, like, these came out before the Harry Potter books, and the main character in the series is named Harry Potter, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, they were talking about bringing it back, a third troll movie, doing it as a cartoon, and calling it The Revenge of Harry Potter, but they were having some licensing issues.
So J.K. Rowling isn't cool with that?
I mean, it's pretty dumb because, they were first. But yeah, Troll...
She seems like she's a cool lady, too.
Troll movies are fantastic. The second one especially because a ham... I think it was a double-decker bologna sandwich that saves the day. And yeah, watch it to find out why. It's weird. Troll Hunter, that's another one. Troll Hunter, which is basically
I don't know any troll movies.
Yeah, Troll...
Except, what, is there a cartoon? There's a recent cartoon.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, but Troll Hunter is done like a documentary, and it's about these guys that are troll hunting. Well, basically, there is a guy that's troll hunting, and a bunch of people that end up following him around and learning about trolls. And my favorite part in that movie is when they're all hidden out in a cave, and the troll hunter tells the crew that's the film crew that's with him. Don't worry, they're not going to find us because, you know, none of us are Christians. But, you know, when they smell the blood of a Christian, they go crazy. So we're good because none of us here are Christians. And they're in this cave full of trolls. And the one guy's like, you know, I'm Christian. I was baptized or something like that. And then all the trolls wake up and start sniffing the air and getting nuts.
Oh, they didn't sniff him, though, before he said that out loud?
No. There's a little bit of comedy to it. You know, it's not like... It's not straight-up horror. I mean, it's kind of hard to do straight-up horror when you're covering trolls.
I don't know. They're apparently nasty motherfuckers.
Well, yeah. I think this one... Well, this one did it well, but there aren't too many movies with trolls that are straight-up horror that I can think of. Now, if there are... And someone out there knows them.
Right in.
Yeah, please send them our way, kingcakewolf@gmail.com. And we'll read it up on the show. Too. We'll give you all the creds for that. is this one scary?
Well, mostly I spent the whole time thinking, just die, greedy bastard, okay. to that young guy. So I'm going to say... Because my overriding feeling was rage that it was not scary.
All right. Well, I would have been scared of it when I was a kid because tiny hairy monsters freaked me out.
I would have turned around and, like, called someone when I found the dead person. So none of this would have happened if I had been in charge.
Gotcha. Is there a lesson here?
Something about greed. Don't be a greedy bastard.
Yeah. I think the lesson is... Definitely. If something seems too good to be true, look for monsters before you go for it.
Yeah, if you think you found gold, bite it because gold is soft, so it will leave bite marks behind.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody did that I saw.
Nobody checked
to see if it was actually gold. So, I mean, like, before you risk life and limb, probably you shouldn't, first off.
Yeah.
But secondly, like, before you do that, if you're gonna do it, make sure it's legit gold.
I'm not going to go and risk my neck for some gold by fighting monsters. I'd rather just keep doing my 9-to-5.
I'll stay poor. It's fine.
So episode rating here.
I'm going to say 3.5.
Yeah, I was going 3.5.
Yeah, the monster, the troll was really cool.
Yeah, it's a decent straightforward tale in my opinion. I think the troll really helps carry it through. And I like the mythology that they put in. So we did skip other media for monsters in the last episode we did. Which was the Rouse Him Not one with the witch. And I'll just make that quick. If you haven't seen Hocus Pocus, definitely check that out.
Much better.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus is great.
And very lady-focused, I approve.
They're going to be doing a Hocus Pocus television series on the Disney Channel, which I'm not too sure about, but I'm going to watch it.
I'll watch it. I mean, I like that light, fluffy stuff, though. Mm-hmm. I love that stuff. So. Yeah. I got really excited because Sabrina the Teenage Witch is on Hulu, and Matt kind of rolled his eyes at me when I was very excited about it.
I like the Sabrina the Teenage Witch comics, which are more horror.
Yeah, well,
they're going to do that for CW, and I'll watch it. I'll see what it's like. I like Supernatural, the TV show that the CW does, so maybe I'll like it. Witching and Bitching, that's another witch movie that's really good.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, you watch some of it. It has the, I forget what her name is, the Venus something. She's that fertility statue.
Oh, yeah, Venus.
But there's this giant fertility monster.
I love her.
It's so crazy. People go and jump down its mouth and slide out of its vagina. And this thing is a kaiju. It's a, like, skyscraper tall fucking fertility monster that all of these witches worship. And at one point, it loses its shit and just starts stomping around and killing people all over. Lots of fun. Foreign movie. You will have to read subtitles, but it's so off the wall, crazy as shit that you won't even realize it.
She's Venus of Willendorf. I had to look it up because I love her so much. She rests her little hands on top of her giant boobs and mm-hmm. she's got this like curly mop of hair on top. She's my favorite. I love her so much.
So they turn her into a giant monster.
I don't think she should be a monster. She's so wonderful.
So we're going to move on to the last one that we're doing tonight. And I have to preface this one by giving our praise to Glim Glim. Our little demonic love you Glim Glim. She lives under our bed. She's a cat with demonic features, tentacles wrapped around her head when she's just a cat head. Glim Glim, her namesake comes from this episode actually. Had to give her a nice and cute name, and I chose one of my favorite episodes of Monsters to praise her with. So, we've got our episode here, Glim Glim. And Glim Glim aired on February 4th of 1989. This is episode 13 of the Monsters show. This was directed by Peter Stein. And Peter Stein, he is mainly a cinematographer. He really didn't direct too many things here. He directed this Glim Glim episode and something in 2007 called Helectra, which I am unfamiliar with. That's all he has directed, but he has done a lot of cinematography. And the cinematography to take note of, besides Hulk Hogan doing Mr. Nanny...
Oh, God.
he did the cinematography for Stephen King's Pet Sematary, as well as Friday the 13th Part 2.
What was that other one that was up there?
So those are the ones that are most to take note of there. And, so our writer here is F. Paul Wilson. And F. Paul Wilson, he really didn't do anything to take note of in the vein of horror. Actors, we've got Mark Hoffmeyer, Brian Fitzpatrick, Ken Walker as Glim Glim, and Jenna Von Oy as Amy. The only one that I really want to take note of here is Jenna Von Oy, who plays Amy, because she is Blossom's best friend. show from the 80s or 90s that that we grew up with.
I watched Blossom, and I did not place her as that adorable little girl.
So we're basically going to dig right into this one. Glim Glim starts off with a father, his young 10-year-old daughter, or maybe a slightly older, maybe like 10 to 12, and stupid redneck that's with him. So they
are... She might be younger than 10. She comes across as very young.
Okay. And the three of them are hiding out underneath a library in a town that is encased with a bubble. They can't leave the town. There's a giant shield around it, and everybody in the town is dead. They're corpses. They've all been afflicted with some kind of virus, and these three people are hiding out. Now, the father and the redneck, they believe that Glim Glim is to blame for this. And they, I don't know why they're hiding underneath the library of all places, because that seems to be where Glim Glim wants to be, in the library above them.
Aware of it, too.
And basically, the little girl has made friends with Glim Glim. She goes and climbs through a vent to see him, and they touch fingers, and she tries to communicate with them, but they have a worlds of differences between them. Glim Glim is basically a giant green turd with antennas and an exposed brain,
he has
four tentacles around his shaft of a body. He's very weird looking.
He kind of reminds me of like a reverse Slimer. Like, he's narrow on top and fat on the bottom.
I could see that. I think he's cool. Like, he's cute to me.
He is adorable. Glim Glim is very cute.
That's how he talks.
He has a very high-pitched voice.
But that's the way that the humans can hear him. However, they do an internal monologue for him that sounds more like a regal man from England.
He sounds like a character you'd hear on Star Trek.
Right. We're going to just quickly go into the acting here. Did you think the acting was pretty decent?
I thought the acting was decent. The child actor, she wasn't the best, mm-hmm. but she wasn't the worst I've ever seen either. She was relatively believable. Again, the redneck guy, like, I hate dickholes, so I just wanted him to die. So, yeah, he's all, let's kill things. We gotta make a run for it. We gotta kill it all.
Yeah, he wanted to kill Glim Glim from the beginning. The only thing holding him back from doing that is the father of the little girl, who believes that, Glim Glim might not be bad. He might actually be trying to help, and they need to determine that before they take harsh action. The redneck dude is just all gung-ho about killing him any second that he gets the chance. Now, I think the writing for this is very strong. I think the way that the story does go is one of the stronger episodes of Monsters.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Really reminds me of some of the darker tones of Goosebumps.
I thought you were going to say Twilight Zone.
No. So basically what ends up happening is... the little girl, is going up there at night and teaching Glim Glim how to write. Glim Glim has been digesting everything he can about our culture to learn how to help us with this virus so that he can prevent it from spreading outside of this town. It is a virus that he has determined is a thing that actually lives inside of his alien race's lower intestines. So I have this theory that his spaceship was flying over this town. They dumped some sewage waste that landed on this planet, not knowing that it was inhabited. When they found out, they were like, we should probably pick up our poop. And so they go down, they find out that everybody in this town is dead. They're like,
hysteria.
Oh shit, let's put up the bubble. So yeah, these three humans are the only ones that are immune to it, seemingly. So what he determines is that he needs some blood from one of them. And to convey this, he has the little girl teach him how to write, because he is a bit challenged with not having fingers. He's just got these tentacles.
Well, and he has, like, mitts on the end. Yeah. He has, like, a thumb and a finger.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he writes to the girl, you please blood now.
You please blood now.
They work it out. She realizes that that's what he needs, and she wants to...
She's like, your writing's getting much better.
Yeah, she also wants to make Glim Glim seem like someone that her father and this other dude can trust. So she comes up with this idea that her and Glim Glim start doing. So they do that thing that they had thought of to show that Glim Glim is friendly. And then she starts giving Glim Glim blood. They use this device that basically is a glass ball that balances on her arm.
Terrible design. Terrible design.
Yeah. And so the father realizes that the daughter is missing in the middle of the night. So he goes and climbs through the vent, sees that she's up there, freaks out.
He goes, what the fuck, Glim Glim?
Yeah. Screams and... The girl drops the ball, the blood falls all over the ground, and...
It's a lot of blood, too,
then the father, child. Yeah, and then the father and the redneck guy run upstairs. The little girl, she goes over to the thing that her and Glim Glim built to show that he's a friendly. And Glim Glim is approached by the father and the redneck in a separate room where... Pretty much, they've got guns, and Glim Glim is going at them, waving his arms, going... And they shoot him, and he fucking drops dead.
A bunch of times.
Yeah.
They keep shooting him.
Yeah, and he drops fucking dead. So, they go over to the girl, and the girl is like, look what Glim Glim and I made you. Now you know that he is a friend. And
what happened to my friend Glim Glim?
So her and Glim Glim basically made a Christmas tree and made it look beautiful with ornaments and tassels and an angel on top. And it says Merry Christmas because it's Christmas night, Christmas Eve, actually. And the father's like, I forgot that it was Christmas with everything going on. I totally forgot. And, yeah.
I think we need to emphasize
the little girl is like, what'd you do to my friend Glim Glim? What'd you do?
Did you hurt my friend Glim Glim?
Yeah, and then the camera pans over to show that Glim Glim was waving in the air a note that he wrote. And right now, his blood is covering this note, but it says, Merry Christmas.
Glim Glim.
So, yeah, these fuckers damned the entire human race.
Yeah, I think that it's very important to emphasize that Glim Glim was working on a cure so that the rest of humanity would survive, and this gun-waving fanatic idiot just doomed all of humanity. So, you know.
Yeah, so that's nice.
At the end, all I wrote was a giant fuck on my notepad.
Yeah, so...
The bastards killed Glim Glim. Fuckers doomed humanity. That's what I wrote. Those are my notes.
So I think the monster for this looks pretty cute. I'd give him a 3.
Are we rating him on just awesomeness or scariness?
Whatever you want to rate him as.
Because he's like 5 on the awesome scale, but like a 0 on the scary scale.
Okay.
Like, he is way cuter than E.T. I was terrified of E.T. as a kid. I would not have been afraid of Glim Glim.
No, I'm a fan of the aesthetics of Glim Glim. He's pretty derpy looking, but I like it.
Glim Glim.
I think that it was pretty cool in one part that we kind of glazed over. Glim Glim is doing an experiment on one of the random people that had died. The father and the redneck see him doing this, and he's basically got a severed head and a body, and there's blood all over the place. It's pretty gross looking. And the dude obviously fell sick to some disease because he's got green foam coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And it just looks like Glim Glim is experimenting on this person like you would, you know, your mind would go to the archetype of an alien doing experiments on humans. And making it gruesome.
Yeah, that was right before
So,
yeah. shot him dead.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool, but Glim Glim's intentions were actually good. At one point, when you hear his inner monologue, he's saying to himself, "I cannot believe that I may have destroyed the entire human race. I must take it upon myself to fix this, and if I do not remedy it, I may not ever return, for I cannot face my younglings, knowing that I have damned an entire cultural species." Yeah.
Something along those lines, right. anyway.
Right. So he has children as well, and they're going to be fatherless.
Orphans.
So, yeah, with a couple of bullets, they fucked up a lot.
This movie broke, this TV show, broke my little heart.
Well, you said too. Movie, so you could see this as a film?
Yeah, I could see this as a film.
All right, I could definitely, too. I think they just expand on it a little more.
And it'd probably lot like E.T.
Well.
Where the kids trust the alien, but they feel like they have to hide it from their parents because their parents wouldn't trust it and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, in other media.
And, humans are kind of awful in that movie, too, aren't they?
Yeah. In other media, you've got Mac and Me, which I do not suggest, which is terrible.
I've never actually watched it.
Mac and Me, I think that was endorsed by McDonald's when they
The Big Mac.
Yeah, when they did the Big Mac, they advertised it with this movie, Mac and Me. Terrible.
Did it look like a Big Mac?
Nope.
That doesn't make any sense.
It scared me. They look like emaciated mutants that grew up in the woods, were never exposed to sunlight, and had distended bellies from diarrhea. So, I really didn't like them. What's that book called? No, I can't think of it. I lost my train of thought.
Aliens.
We'll come back to that.
Aliens.
Did you think this was scary?
No, this was heartbreaking.
Yeah, you got tears in your eyes. I didn't think it was scary either,
part of the tears in my eyes are that I cut onions earlier, but this was, legit heartbreaking.
And is there a lesson here?
Humanity will doom itself. Humanity will just doom itself.
Can you expand on that?
We will be our own downfall. We can't get our shit together. We have all this incredible capability that we lose by the time we're adults.
All right.
On that happy note.
So what would you rate this?
I would give this one a 5. This one was a good episode. It wasn't scary. It wasn't like a typical monster show. But it was pretty amazing.
I would give this one a 5 as well. I really enjoyed this one. I think the message behind it is very strong. So in other media, what I was trying to think of was Childhood's End, which is a book that I really enjoyed when I was much younger. This is by Arthur C. Clarke. And what's so great about this is it's sort of like a peaceful invasion. And these aliens are trying to get humanity to slowly get used to their existence and what they truly are. So I am going to spoil this. So if you don't want to know, you can just shut it off right now.
Basically, talking about spoiling the book? Because we spoil all the episodes of Monsters. Right.
So basically what's going on here is these aliens look like Satan. They have typical horns, pointed
hooves.
Pointed tail, cloven hooves. They look like a monstrous devil, but they're actually nice. And the story behind it goes that when they came very early in our development as humans, we saw them as these devils and saw them doing things to better us, but we didn't see it as that. And we kind of created this whole Christian religion and demons around them as though they were...
Oh, so they tried to teach people.
As though they were, monsters.
They tried to say, so, hey, we can be equal.
That's where the book goes. I don't know if that's, and there's a lot more to it I'm not going to get into, but that's like just one of the core aspects of it that's very interesting. But I do see that there's a television series that had like 4 episodes. It was like a mini series that was released, and that looks pretty cool. I didn't know that that was a thing, but apparently it is. And so if you don't feel like reading it, apparently you can watch it, and maybe it's as good as the book. I don't know. But that's where we're going to cut it off here for today, and thank you for joining us. Join us tomorrow, where we will be covering some more episodes of Monsters for this 31 Days of Halloween. And yeah, thank you again for joining us. I'm going to cut it out with the intro to the show Monsters, as always. And bye-bye.
It's family hour. There must be something on. Oh, wow! Candy critters!
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show.
Shh, it's starting.